Hunt, hunt, hunt.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Get to talk to Jason Wilde on a Dude Friday. Talking about a lot of dude stuff today. Good morning, Jason. How are you, bud?
I'm good, dude. How are you?
I'm doing great. So because we had off yesterday, I didn't get an opportunity to talk to you in the chat that the Packers beat writers ended up having with Ed Policy. The one thing I think everybody got caught up on were the three priorities. Winning football games makes sense. Building strong community connections was number three. Okay, that makes sense. Number two, keeping the Packers in Green Bay. I think that caught a lot of people off guard. When you heard that, how did you interpret that?
I didn't interpret it. I didn't even really think about it, frankly. Because it was just sort of a, you know, he was making this opening statement and outlining his priorities. And they have talked in the past about that, right? And they have to be vigilant. Because you never know what's around the corner. I know later in our conversation, he talked at length about private equity being allowed in the league and how that money is something that is basically, I don't want to say making up for, but, you know, basically canceling out the one advantage that the Packers did have, which was being able to have a stock sale every year. Remember when Jerry Jones was like talking about how jealous he was of the fact that the Packers could do that and that he wondered if the Cowboys could do that? Like, that was something that the Packers uniquely had to raise capital if they needed it. And now with private equity being allowed, that has kind of been neutralized. So I do think that it is, you know, something that they always talk about in terms of their stewardship of the organization. At the same time, you know, I watched Adam Schefter's appearance on your show. I mean, I do think this comes down to that tax thing, like Joshy said. I do think that that's bubbling beneath the surface somewhere. Well, we need to make sure that we don't go anywhere, and it would certainly help us if we could save that $43 million a year by not paying, you know, this rent or lease or taxing to the city of Green Bay, to which I say, yeah, well, it would really help me if my house started on fire, if the city had enough money to pay for the firefighters to come put the fire out. So I did not, I'll be honest, I shirked my responsibility as a reporter. That did not resonate with me to the level that the reaction has been to it.
Well, because I heard it, Jason, and I just thought, okay, this is just something that somebody in his position says. And I'm, again, maybe I'm wrong, but I do believe that that was probably something that Bob Harlan had to worry about. Okay, what are we going to do? You know, the Packers in the 80s and in early 90s before Brett and Reggie and all that success came. Okay, how do we make this sustainable? Then Brett and Reggie come, they have the success. Bob gets the stadium expansion. Murphy comes along, gets Title Town built, and now they've got $500 million in the kitty. So I guess it's just something that, yeah, maybe that's something they had to worry about 35 years ago. But now it doesn't seem like you have to worry about that as much because of the capital you've been able to generate around the stadium expansion in the Title Town district.
Yeah, I would agree. And I do believe they said the exact thing about keeping the Packers in Green Bay when they announced the Title Town expansion. And when they talked about how important it was to grow local revenue, despite being in the smallest market in American sports. But to your point, yeah, they've got more than half a billion with a B dollars in the corporate reserve fund. That was not the case back in the 90s and 2000s. And I do think that it was a realistic and not imaginary threats when Bob Harlan was freaking going door to door trying to convince people to vote for the stadium tax so they could get the renovation done. I do think that was an extremely pivotal moment, and we don't know what would have happened had they not gotten that, right? That has been a cash engine for them, and if they lose and they can't do that project back then in 2001, maybe they're just a perennial doormat, and eventually the NFL says, you know, we need to consider doing something about this. But I don't feel like that's the existential threat now that it was then. And if he was just saying, look, this is about vigilance and always remembering that that's one of our core things that we absolutely have to do. I believe it is in their mission statement, Jerry Maguire. But the bottom line is that I don't think that there is a threat right now to that. And I was more than a little surprised by how it took hold.
Jason, I just have a quick follow-up. How much do you believe the Packers believe private equity is a huge concern versus, let's just say, continuing to raise ticket prices, concessions, and taking fans for all they have? Like, how much is just money-making and how much is the Packers could eventually be at a disadvantage?
Yeah, that's a good question, Josh. I mean, look, first of all, in the second half of that, they're going to keep doing that, raising ticket prices and taking fans for all they have. Like, I was having this explained to me at one point on Friday that the NFL has this algorithm, for lack of a better term, that determines how much, based on demand and current price point and everything else, what the optimal ticket price would be for your tickets. And the Packers, which I think they feel is proof that they're doing the best they can considering the circumstances, not sure I entirely agree, the Packers are a meaningful amount below what that equation says their tickets should be. And that, as someone said while we were talking about it, you know, there are owners of big franchise, you know, big market teams that get a portion of that are really bothered by it. Now, again, I still don't necessarily believe that that's a good enough reason to raise ticket prices every single year, but that's just my opinion. As far as private equity, all I can go on is what Ed Policy said to us, and he emphasized it as an authentic concern. So for what that's worth, they certainly acted like, and I can't say that they were acting in bad faith because I don't know that, but they certainly acted like it is a significant concern for them.
Jason, should the Packers have signed Jair to the deal he got with the Ravens? It seemed like a pretty safe deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I understand that you don't want to throw good money after bad if that's the way you look at his contract, but $4 million guaranteed for a two-time All-Pro who is 28 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly thought the number would be higher that would have required him to stay in Green Bay, right? Because, you know, the waxy buildup, bad blood, whatever you want to call it, to some degree, but on both sides. Like, you know, Goody was just pissed that he missed so much time. That was obvious. But, you know, the fact that, and look, we're having the same conversation about Elgton Jenkins, right? It's different because he didn't miss all this time, but he just wants some guaranteed money on the last 2 years of his deal. And usually contracts like this in both of these cases, and I haven't talked to Goody about this, I haven't asked him about this, but usually there's that roster bonus in like year three of the extension that triggers either getting it paid, so boom, you just got, I don't know, $6 million before your third year of your deal, or they pay it, convert it to a signing bonus, spread out the charge, and generate some cap space. And in neither of those contracts was there that balloon payment, if you will. And so both of those guys, in different situations, to be sure, one with the general manager saying, we think he can be an all-pro center, and the other one openly talking about wanting to get something for him via trade, both of them were in a similar position, 28, 29 years old, on a team that doesn't like 30-year-olds on the roster, with 2 years left on their deals, wanting some security. And, you know, I thought what Jair's dad said to KBN was really, really interesting, that, you know, the structure of what they were being offered and that there was no guarantees at all. If $4 million, I understand we're talking about, you know, private equity and everything else,
mm-hmm.
is really nothing to this team.
That's what punters are making now.
Right. And so for him to sign that deal, now I know it was reported that he took less to go to the Ravens than he had offers from other teams because he wanted to play with his old college buddy, Lamar Jackson. That said, Landis Alexander flat out told KBN that had the Packers made the same offer, he'd have stayed. And I have no reason. I mean, is it possible that's not true? Of course. I don't know Jair's dad, and I don't know. It's easy to say that now, but clearly they never got that offer. And he was very clear about understanding he's been hurt and understanding that the pay cut had to happen. But that is the give and take, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you're supposed to make $16 million this year. If we give you $4 million of it guaranteed and you can earn back another $2 million if you stay healthy, is that something you might be interested in? If I'm Jair, I want some guaranteed money. So I think he's probably telling the truth.
He also said that Jair wasn't able to counter, and that's not surprising. In these situations, teams make the offer of a pay cut. Player says no, they just get released. That's how it goes. But in this specific situation, do you think the Packers should have been more open to a negotiation?
Yes, absolutely. I don't know, and look, I don't want to cast any aspersions at Goody, because I know there are some that think, oh, this guy always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room and he never makes any bad decisions. I certainly have had my times where I've been like, why don't you just admit that that was a mistake and a miscalculation? I mean, look, they feel really good about their corners. At least that's what they say publicly. Privately, I'm not sure. I'm sure he's probably saying the same thing now, but I'm not sure I would feel as good as they do, right? Like, you know, they play a lot of really good corners or a lot of really good wide receivers, and their three corners are varying degrees of unproven. Keyshawn Nixon is unproven as a number one. Carrington Valentine, while he started 22 games in this league his first 2 years, is still a seventh-round pick and still has more to prove in year three. And Nate Hobbs, who, by the way, missed six games himself last year, has to prove that he's an every-down corner, and he can, in fact, play inside and outside the way the Packers believe he can. So you put that all together, and at $4 million, are they better with Jair on this team? They definitely are. So, yes, I would. But again, this is Goody has his plan, right? Rob Domofsky detailed it. If that plan leads to a Super Bowl berth, we'll all be singing his praises and saying he knew exactly what he was doing. But again, to me, the takeaway of our time with Ed Policy was that unlike Bob Harlan with Ted and Mike, there were no extensions made to the head coach and the GM on the departing president's way out the door. And the new president said unequivocally, there won't be anything done before the season for these guys. And he also said that he doesn't believe in lame duck seasons, but he would never say never. So I am very curious, because that means both the coach and the GM, whether Packers fans want to hear it or not, have been put on notice. They haven't been put on the hot seat, but they have been put on notice.
Jason, appreciate the time, buddy. Enjoy your weekend.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde joins us 3 times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We've got our conversation with Craig Karmazin coming up next, but I do want to tell you about our friends at the Wisconsin Country Club. Do what I did. If you're looking for a great place to play, a golf course that is going to be challenging, and you're not going to get tired of playing it because it's going to be a unique challenge every time you play it. That's what the Wisconsin Country Club provides. I also really enjoy the practice area, the range. It's got a couple different short game areas, of course, the putting green, to work on my game when I can't get out there and play a full round of golf. But other great things about the Wisconsin Country Club include no assessments, no food and beverage minimums, just that incredible challenging golf course, other top-tier amenities like tennis, pickleball, and a pool. Just got a pickleball pro out there as well, so you can sharpen up that game as well. Get started today, thewisconsincountryclub.com. It's just a fair way away.